Let us now discuss a very important chapter, that is medico-legal issues. So, before we go ahead, let us first understand what is a medico-legal case, that is also known as MLC. There are certain cases which require medical treatment, but at the same time, they would involve information to the law enforcing authorities like the police. So, cases which involve medical treatment as well as intervention by the law enforcing authorities is typically called as a medico-legal case. And they are typically divided into two, that is the outpatient medical legal case and the inpatient. Let us now discuss the types of medical legal cases. So typically any all types of road traffic accidents, rail traffic accidents, or burns, stabs, hanging, electrocution, poisoning, drowning, bomb blast, explosions, all air and sea accidents, and many other cases having legal implications. So, legal intervention. It is basically an injury which is caused by police action, lathi charge, etc. Natural disasters like say earthquake, lightning, volcanoes, floods, etc. Molestations, rape, kidnapping, child abuse, inhalation of gas and vapors, or say fall from height. When a patient is actually brought dead and the cause of death is not known, that can be a typical medical legal case. A lot of industrial accidents which happen, and animal bite, snake bite, etc. Also bullet injury, hijacking, hostage taking, possession of firearms with intent to injure, and anything related to smuggling. So let us now discuss the medical legal case in private hospitals. So what are the formalities for a medical legal case? Most important entry like name of the patient, age, sex, date of admission, time, IP number, hospital number, type of MLC is done in the main emergency register. All medical legal cases are registered and admitted. Case is examined and case sheet written by the medical officer in charge. Accident registers, 2 copies, and police information, 3 copies are written. So the police also has to have the record, and hence copies are made for them also. The original police inspection form should be dispatched to the assigned police station as quick as possible. Preferably not later than a day, less than 24 hours. And the signature of the receiving police officer should be obtained. This is very important that the signature is obtained. In most of the government hospitals, if you typically see police stations are inside the hospital premises, but that's not the case with all the private hospitals. In private hospitals, the accident dispatch the accident register and police information to the nearby police station. Now, nature of injury can be either simple, grievous, or opinion reserved. And according to Section 320 of the Indian Penal Code, the following injuries are grievous: emasculation, permanent privation of sight of either eye, permanent privation of hearing of either ear, and privation of any member, means organ or joint, destruction or permanent impairing of the powers of any member of joint. It can also be permanent disfiguration of the head or face, fracture or dislocation of bone or tooth, and any hurt which endangers life or which causes the victim to be severely bodily pain or unable to follow his ordinary pursuits, that is routine work, for a period of 20 days. So all this typically fall under the MLC. Now, writing of a medical legal case. So typically a road traffic accident, it is right as alleged RTA involving car, cycle, bus, lorry, bus or scooter, two-wheeler, hit and run, etc. Vehicle number is to be written if known, and the details of the case file like the mode of accident, the time of accident, and the place of accident. To be followed for all medical legal cases wherever applicable, brought by name is a must. And the time at what the patient is brought in, condition of the patient after accident, condition of the patient at the time of accident, at the time of admission, sorry, injuries, 3 ID marks preferable, 2 ID marks are must, so identification marks are a must in that case, and signature at the end of the case file. Identification marks. It is better to note down at least 3 identification marks. If only 2 identification marks are recorded, there may be a chance of losing one of the marks due to amputation of the body part or otherwise. So normally, when the patient is brought in with a road accident kind of a thing, for example, there are chances that during operation, you might not be able to trace down the marks. So it is always better to have three identification marks. The following marks can be taken for identification. Congenital, that is the birth marks, typically mole, web fingers or toes, cleft palate, etc. Then the ones which are acquired like scars, tattoo marks, deformities, old amputations, etc. Then assault, which is typically written as alleged assault by known, unknown, single person or maybe a group of people. Assault by hand, knife or any kind of weapon that has been used. If it's a railway accident, then a railway track accident or alleged to injured in a train accident, collision between two trains or derailment, etc. Poisoning, if the patient has consumed poison or tablets, or the urine sample, blood sample or gastric contents have to be immediately sent for forensic examination in that case. If it's a case of drowning, then drowning in fresh water, sea water, burns, how it has happened, always you have to mention the burns injury in percentage, how much percentage of the body is burned. Always take history from the patient if the patient is conscious, and if the patient is unconscious, then take the history from the nearest relative. If it, in the case of natural disaster, if it has happened by earthquake, lightning, volcanoes, floods, in case of molestations, rape, if it's a case of rape, then whether the rape is by a known, unknown, single person or a group of people, patient should be examined by the gynecologist preferably. Kidnapping, whether the kidnapping has been known by a known, unknown person or by a single person or a group of people. If it's a case of domestic, say a wife-husband beating case, then a medical legal case is registered, provided one of them insists on it. And whether has been beaten up by husband, wife, etc., all these details have to be mentioned. In the case of child abuse, whether it has happened by a known person or an unknown person, again by a single person or a group of people. Electrocution, always mention about the entry and the exit wound, that is very important. Breaking the death news, prepare yourself presentable before leaving the resuscitation room, this is very important. Ensure that you are speaking with the correct relatives of the deceased. You know, it's always important that you give out this information to the right people. Introduce yourself who are to the patient's relatives. So, you have to, if you are the doctor in charge, then you have to introduce yourself and to the relatives of the patient. Preferably, you have to take them to a separate room and ask them to sit down before you give the news. And always try to speak slowly. Keep the sentences short and non-technical, because obviously since they are not healthcare professionals, they will not understand the technical language. So, always keep your language as simple as possible while you are communicating this information. Never use words like passed away or gone to better place, etc. Use simple words and keep the communication straight and direct. Death certificate. So, when you are giving the death certificate, the following are the facts to be taken in consideration while issuing the death certificate. Typically, it should be issued by a registered medical practitioner only. No certificate is to be issued without examining the patient. That is very important. In cases of any suspicion, if there is to the health, the doctor in charge feels that there is any foul play, death certificate should not be issued and the matter should be brought to the police authority. Physician must be sure about the cause of death before issuing the death certificate. If he does not follow these rules, you know, if there is a foul play, then again he'll be answerable to why this certificate was issued. So the physician has to be very careful. In case he suspects any kind of foul play, it is always better to inform the police authority. During the issue of the death certificate for the second time due to any reason, the term duplicate must be mentioned. So in case the relatives of the person are asking for a second copy, for whatever reasons, it's always better to mention the term duplicate, or else it can again cause problems. Physician should not issue death certificate if he has not attended the patient during his last illness at least in the fortnight, that is 15 days before his death. This is very, very important. No death certificate should be issued if the attending doctor has not attended the patient during his last 15 days of illness. Under no circumstances, a medical practitioner should sign a blank certificate before the death of the patient and leave the task of filling the details to someone else. So, giving it to your assistant and asking him to fill the details is wrong. It's always better that such important documents are prepared by the attending doctor himself. whoever issues or signs any certificate relating to any fact, knowing or believing that such certificate is false in any material point, shall be punished in the same manner as if he have false evidence under section 197 of the IPC. So, if any kind of false material has been, information has been given, then the person who has given the certificate is liable to be punished. Issuing of a false certificate by a registered medical practitioner may lead to erasure of the name of the practitioner from the medical register. A doctor can even lose his license to practice. He has to be very careful. So it is wise to maintain a register which will contain details of the medical certificate issued by the medical practitioner. Always a second copy and a register to be maintained by the hospital as to who has given the death certificate. Death certificate given by government, it is issued either by municipality or corporation as per the death register. Student infant death syndrome, that's also known as SIDS. Any infant who dies where you have a reason to suspect a sudden infant death syndrome should be reported to the medical examiner for autopsy, because the diagnosis cannot be established without an autopsy. So, you know, in case there is a sudden death of an infant, then it should always be reported to the examiner, because an autopsy is the only thing that can help us to diagnose the cause. Consent. Consent is a fundamental and established principle in the Indian law. Every person has the right to determine what shall be done to his body. Right? So self-defense, without consent, no procedures can be done ahead. Self-defense of the body proves its right to protection of the body integrity against invasion by others. All medical procedures, including examination, diagnostic procedures, and medical research on patient's body, potentially acts of bodily trespass or assault in the absence of consent or statutory sanction. If consent is not obtained, it's just like trespassing the body, and it is punishable under IPC 351. Treatment and diagnosis cannot be forced upon anyone who does not wish to receive them, except in statutory sanction. So, as we have discussed this earlier, without consent, you know, without informing, no treatment and diagnosis can be forced upon any patient. So, what does a consent mean? Consent means free, voluntary agreement or compliance. Very simple terms, it means it's free, voluntary, accepted, and the patient is ready to comply with whatever has been told. Section 13 of the Indian Contract Act lays down that two or more persons are said to be in consent with each other when they agree upon something in the same manner. So when two or more people agree in the same manner and upon the same thing, so that's basically consent. In consent, there are three separate but correlated elements that are voluntariness, capacity and knowledge. So these are the three very important elements of consent, that is voluntariness, capacity and knowledge. What does voluntariness mean? It suggests willingness of a patient to undergo treatment. So capacity means the degree of ability of the patient to understand the nature and consequences of the treatment offered. If possible, always the treatment procedure should be explained to the patient in the language that they would best comprehend. So, you know, your consent forms might have say typically English filled or say filled in Hindi, but if the patient is does not understand either English or Hindi, then it is very important either to have it in separate languages or always to explain it in presence of a relative or a guardian and in the language that they best understand. You know, knowledge means that sufficient amount of information about the nature and consequence of treatment has been disclosed to the patient. So all the treatment procedures which are going to be done, all the alternative procedures along with the fees have to be explained to the patient. These three elements must be present in the consent. Only then it is legally valid. So if these three things are missing, then the consent is not valid. So explain everything to the patient, give all the best possible treatment that is available, what are the options available, what is the treatment cost, what is the result expected, and side effects if any. All these things should be clearly explained to the patient. Section 90 of the IPC defines consent in negative terms. As per this section, any consent given under the following five circumstances will not be true consent. An analysis of the section shows that consent is not true consent if it is given by a person under fear of injury. So under the following five sections, Section 90 says that the following consent would not be a true consent if it is given by a person under fear of injury or by a person who is under misconception of the facts. And person who obtained consent knows or has reason to believe that such consent was given in consequence of such fear or misconception. So, if the person is under fear of injury or misconception or the facts are not properly presented, then that consent is not a true consent. By a person who is under the influence of intoxication, nothing should, as far as possible in such cases, the consent would never be considered as a true consent. By a person who is of unsound mind or unable to understand the nature and consequences of that to which he gives consent, if the person is not of a stable mind, then or of unsound mind, and he is not able to understand whatever has been told to him, then that's not a true consent. And by a person who is below age of 12 years, so in case the patient is a minor, then he cannot sign the consent form. It's always better if the parents of such patients are along with the patient and they are signing. Who can give consent? Any adult, basically above the age of 18 years in India, but a person above age of 12 years can give consent for medical treatment. This is slightly a matter of an adult is basically anybody above 18 years and they can give consent. But I would also say that even if the patient is about 12 years of age, if the patient is say 13 or 14, it's always better that the parents are explained about the procedures that are going to be performed and the treatment cost, and it's always better that the signatures of both the guardian as well as the patient is taken. The Indian Penal Code and other law for a person under 12 years of age or of unsound mind is her guardian's person in whose lawful custody he is can give consent. That is as per section 89 of the Indian Penal Code. So if the patient is under 12 years of age, unsound mind, then the consent can be given by the guardian. Loco parentis. It's an emergency involving children when their parent or guardian are not available. Consent is taken from the person who is in charge of the child. For example, if the school teacher, say the student is in a boarding school or is in school and at that time the parents are not available, then the teacher can give consent for treating the child. Or say the child has gone for a picnic and suddenly he or she falls sick, then the principal of the school can also give consent. Provisions for consent under law. Section 87 to 91 of the Indian Penal Code deals with consent. So, section 88 of IPC lays down that an act is not an offense if it is not intended or not known to be likely to cause death, which causes any harm to a person for whose benefit it is done in good faith with his consent to suffer it. So, as per section 88, any act is not an offense if it is not intended or not known that it is likely to cause death or any harm, and it has been done basically in good faith with his consent to suffer it. Thus, after a valid consent, if a surgeon operates on the patient and patient dies on the operation table, then the surgeon cannot be held guilty of murder. As we all know, human body is very complex. Even at the last minute, things can go haywire. But no doctor would do it on purpose, that's for sure. So, if at all, after all the things have been explained and on the operation table, suddenly an emergency arises and the patient dies, surgeon cannot be held guilty of murder. The surgeon can be held guilty if there is negligence on his part, but if he has done everything as per what is required of him in proper precautions, then he cannot be held guilty. Persons who are non-qualified in medical professions are not allowed to take plea of this section as they are not said to do the act in good faith. As we have discussed this previously, so you have people from alternative medicine who are doing operation, then yes, then that's not in good faith, they are not allowed to do it. Right? IPC 52 says that act is only done in good faith if it is done with due care and attention. This is very important. Due care and attention with all the proper protocols, procedures, treatment procedures, everything has to be followed in a very proper manner. So if it is done in good faith, yes, then it's fine. Section 91 of the Indian Penal Code serves as a corollary to sections 87 to 89. It states that exceptions contained in section 87 to 89 do not extend to acts which are offenses independently of any harm which they may cause to the person giving consent. So, bearing physical examination, any medical procedure requires written consent. So, patient comes, you are doing a physical examination, it's fine. The moment your treatment starts, the moment you are giving medicines, the moment any procedure is performed, a consent is required. Written consent should refer to one specific procedure and not a blanket performance, blanket permission for admission to hospital. So it's not that you take one signature and you know you can do any procedure. For a specific procedure that you are doing, a consent is required. If it is any other procedure, say after maybe after 6 months, so then you have to take a separate consent. It does not mean that with one signature you can do multiple procedures. A registered medical practitioner can examine an accused by using reasonable force if the examination is requested by the investigating police officer, not below the rank of police sub-inspector, and force should be applied by police. So, yes, if reasonable force is required, it can be done, preferably by the police. Consent of the patient cannot be defense to medical practitioners in negligence. This is very important. Just because the patient has given consent, that does not mean the doctor is free to do anything and everything. If there is any kind of negligence on his part, then he will be held guilty. Whole law of negligence assumes the principle of consent. If found under the influence of alcohol, then the consent of such person will not be valid. So it is always better to obtain consent from guardian or parents, right? So if the patient is under the influence of alcohol or any other, the patient is not of sound mind, please don't take consent from such patients. It's always better it is done from the guardian, parents, etc. Now, what are the types of consent? The following are the types of consent. One is the implied consent. Implied consent is the one which is not written but legally effective. So, when patient comes to the doctor's consulting room or hospital and waits for the doctor, implied consent is presumed. Very important statement. Implied consent is presumed. Such implied consent only goes to history taking and ordinary medical examination like inspection, palpation, auscultation, right? So, for a basic examination, history taking implied consent is fine. Once the patient is in the waiting room, that means that the patient has come for taking treatment, knowing the diagnosis and for examination. It does not cover the examination of private parts of the patient or matters such as vein punctures or injections or any other major intervention. Again, very important, after the examination, it does not give the doctor any kind of permission for examining the private parts of the patient or vein punctures or injections. For any such procedures, it is always better to do it after the consent and that too in the presence of an associate doctor or an assistant. Informed consent is an ongoing process that includes exchange of information and development of choices. As I said, explain everything to the patient, give the treatment options which are available and the best possible treatment options. The person who gives consent must be aware of the risk involved and on that awareness of the patient should give consent. So, if a particular procedure is being performed, what are the beneficial effects that the patient is going to receive? If at all any side effects or any harmful effects that can occur because of the procedure, that also should be explained to the patient. And once he agrees to that, he should be made aware of that, then consent is to be taken. It must be understood that only in emergency that consent will be done away with. Otherwise, consent is necessary and that too in writing. So, if the patient is brought in an unconscious state and nobody is accompanying him and it's an absolute medical emergency, say in case of road accident or something, then without consent the doctor can proceed because it's an emergency. But otherwise, consent is compulsory and that too not an oral consent, it has to be in writing. How a consent should be obtained? The element that a physician must discuss with his or her patient to fully obtain informed consent are the following. So, the following are the elements of consent. The diagnosis and the nature of the condition or illness causing for medical intervention. So, after the history taking and the examination is over, what is the diagnosis and the nature of the condition for which the patient has come to you? The nature and the purpose of the treatment or the procedure recommended. What is the treatment that the doctor wishes for the patient and what is the procedure that has to be done. The risk and the potential complications associated with the treatment or procedure. So, any treatment, definitely it would, the aim of any hospital or doctor is to cure the patient. But at the same time, it is possible that it can cause some kind of side effects, or if the patient is under the influence of medication for a long period of time, that can cause certain side effects. So, all these things have to be explained to the patient beforehand. All feasible alternative treatment procedures, this is very important again. What are the alternative treatments? The patient says, okay, I'm not comfortable with this, give me alternative treatment. So, all those things have to be explained what are the different procedures that can be done, including the act. If the patient says, I don't want to undergo the treatment. So, if the patient is not undergoing treatment, then what is going to happen? What are the risks associated with it? What are the complications associated with the alternative? Everything has to be explained. The relative probability of success for the treatment or procedures in understandable terms. Again, very important, understandable terms, you know. When patients come, everybody is not highly educated, highly qualified or a highly technical person. So, please talk to the patient in the language that they best understand as far as possible in very simple terms. What is the success rate of a particular treatment? So, for say example, a patient undergoing a root canal treatment involving the teeth. So, you have to tell them, okay, this is the success rate of this treatment. Your case is on a scale of 0 to 10. This stands on 9 or 10 and it's a good case. And I think it should be 99% successful. So, you have to give some kind of probability, okay, this is going to succeed. If you feel the case is bad or horrible and you feel it's not going to succeed, you have to inform the patient. The treatment is done very, the treatment success rate is very high, but the case in which you are presented with is not a good case. Maybe there is a swelling or it's a long-standing infection. So, we cannot save the tooth, you know. So, all these things have to be explained in detail. Right to refuse consent. A competent adult has a right to refuse treatment even if others, including the medical practitioner, believe that the refusal is neither in his or her best interest. Yes, so the patient has a right to refuse treatment. And if he is a competent adult, even if a doctor feels, you know, okay, this is in the best interest of the patient, but if the patient does not want to undergo the treatment, he has the right to refuse consent. Advance directives, also known as living wills, these are made by the competent patients with the intention that they will remain effective if the patient becomes incompetent. This is very important. In our country, there are no laws regarding advance directives. A refusal to treat the patient can only be accepted if this possesses no additional risk to the patient and a colleague was available to take over the patient's case. Right? The medical practitioner should also make note of the refusal placed upon him by the patient. So, all these things have to be mentioned in the case paper that the patient has refused to undergo the treatment. A refusal to treat the patient is accepted if this possesses no additional risk to the patient and a colleague is available to take over the patient's case. This is also very important. If the doctor's colleague is available to take over the case, even that has to be mentioned. Can consent be done away with? Very important and a very tricky question. The consent can be done away with if there is emergency and there is no advance directive or refusal to take treatment. So, most importantly in case of emergency, yes. When patient is not in a position to give consent, is not accompanied by his own relatives, yes, the doctor can start treatment. And there is no advance directive or refusal to take treatment. If the patient needs emergent and immediate surgery and the waiting for the consent may prove fatal for the patient, the surgeon may go ahead with the operation without waiting for the consent of the patient because it is in best interest and it is to save the life of the patient. So, as we said, you know, in case there is an emergency and you feel the treatment has to be started immediately because, you know, the patient arrives to you in the golden hour, you know, where every minute is very critical. So, at that time, you cannot wait to take consent. This view has been taken by our Indian courts also. Now, consent of maternity patients. This is very important. Consent to obstetric procedures should be discussed during the antenatal period. Yes, if the medical practitioner finds that wishes of the pregnant woman are unusual, this should be noted very, very carefully in the antenatal record. If no immediate necessity for operation, consent should be obtained. In case of maternity patients, you know, when the patient is coming to you in for checkups, regular checkups, and during the antenatal period, all these things have to be explained to the patient. If the patient's demands are or wishes are slightly out of the way, you know, some patients are very fussy about what they want, what they don't want. So, all those things have to be noted down very carefully. Confidentiality. This is very important. Privacy and confidentiality are cornerstones of doctor-patient relationship. A doctor-patient relationship cannot develop or cannot go further if there is no confidentiality there in that relationship. Patient must feel absolutely comfortable disclosing all the relevant information, most of which is highly sensitive in nature. So, you know, there is a saying, never lie to your doctor or to your lawyer. That's absolutely true. You know, the patient has to be very comfortable in disclosing all the relevant information though it may be sensitive in nature, you know, bodily functions, physical, sexual activities, medical history, etc. With this information, doctors can provide the proper diagnosis and treatment. So, for doctor, the most important thing is the history of the patient. Say, for example, the patient is coming to the doctor for the first time. How do you expect a person to treat the patient when he is meeting the patient for the first time? It is only on the basis of history taking, on the basis of examination. So, history taking, in that, it is the duty of the patient to give all the proper information to the doctor. You know, nothing should be hidden from the doctor. Medical privacy encourages patient to seek information and support to fully understand and evaluate the options so that they can make the most informed medical decision. So when medical privacy, basically it encourages the patient, you know, to seek all the information and support so that they can understand properly what are the treatment procedures, what are the options available, and so that even the patient is involved in making the best possible decision for his or her own benefit, right? Further, denial of access to treatment and various goods such as employment, life and medical insurance could be placed at risk. They can be at risk, you know, your job, life, even your insurance policy. The information is not, the flow of information is proper. So, you know, even when you are doing your insurance policy, they would ask you certain things, and if you are trying to hide certain ailments which are discovered at a later date, you were suffering from it. So, then your claim is not passed. So, there is no point hiding things. It's always better to be very transparent, to be very honest, and to give all possible information when it comes to healthcare. Privacy violations in healthcare mainly occur as a result of human error, theft, compromises to electric system, and inaccurate access control. And this would typically include disclosure of personalized information to third parties without consent, inadequate notifications to a patient of a data breach, unlimited or unnecessary collection of personal health data. Yes, that's wrong. Collection of personal health data that is not accurate or relevant. So it has to be relevant as well as accurate. The purpose of collecting data if it is not specified, and refusal to provide medical records upon request by client. So in all these cases, privacy violation in healthcare can occur. There are certain situations in wherein disclosure of personal health information is permissible. For example, public safety. Example, if there is a disease registration, if the disease is communicable, so, and you have to investigate such a disease, drug adverse event reporting, shared confidentiality. So when you are referring the patient to another doctor, so in that case also it has to be done. When required by law, administration of justice. Example, specific provisions for malpractice cases, workmen's compensation cases, consumer protection cases, or for income tax authorities. In such cases, you have to disclose the personal health information. Also in cases of medical research, for example, vaccination studies, these are basically done to understand the legal and the political ecosystem of the health information privacy in India. So in all these cases, you know, the disclosure of personal health information is permissible. Legislation. Health legislation in India is specific to certain health conditions including mental, physical illness, disability, communicable diseases, and HIV/AIDS. So the MCI's Code of Ethics, that is Medical Council of India's Code of Ethics Regulation 2002, sets the professional standards for medical practice.